Hello everyone, this is Mig Gringard of ChessNinja.com here with another ICC Chess FM podcast for the Dresden Olympiad, currently in progress. Round 5 is in the books now. That was just held the other day. We had an off day. We're speaking to you now, coming from that magical moment when everyone gets to take a break and go to the Bermuda Party. Perhaps the actually more famous incidents have occurred at the Bermuda Party over the years than have actually occurred on the board in various Olympiads. Everything from fist fights to girlfriends stealing to political deals. It all happens on the first off day at the Olympiad. Bermuda may not field a heck of a chess team, but they do field a heck of a party, I must say that. Always good fun to see the pictures trickle out from that, seeing all your favorite super grandmasters attempting to dance. Good fun. So, shout out to buddy Nick Falks there on the Bermuda team and perpetual party organizer. You can tell why how can he play chess? He's got to really focus on organizing that party. So, let's see what we got here for round 5. This was the big clash between the last two teams to have perfect scores. That took place between Russia and Germany 1, as we like to call them. Let's go ahead and take a look at the standings here, and you can see here from the standings that not a whole lot happened there. We had 4 draws, and that left them both tied at the top of the cross table here with a bunch of other teams now who've caught up to them with 4-1 matches and a drawn match each, all with 9 there. We'll see, you can see that there over on the side. You've got those 9. Let's see if we can make... I don't think we can make a circle small enough, but... Yeah, there we go. Try not to write over everything. So there's Russia, but everybody else coming in with 9 here as well. And of course, those teams will start to meet up and hopefully settle this thing. Although, again, with match scoring as we have here, instead of board scoring, it is going to be a clump for a long time. It's going to be almost impossible for anybody to break away with this sort of thing. You'd really have to, which is kind of the point. It supposedly adds some tension, but in my opinion, it just kind of makes it into a mess with so many teams. But we will see. All right, so again, Russia, Germany 1, 4 draws. I thought they might rest Vladimir Kramnik, who hasn't been looking too good, but he had his Petrov in gear and wanted to show off his latest preparation there against Arkady Nijdic, the top player there for Germany, who's doing very, very well. You might remember that Nijdic stomped Kramnik's Petrov in Dortmund a few months ago this year, and with a nice piece of opening preparation, and Kramnik, I don't know if you can call an easy draw a victory, but if in the Petrov, that's pretty much how victories, well, that counts as a victory in the Petrov, is what I'm saying. And Kramnik did that, so good for him. And the other games, it's still, I really thought Germany was going to be in trouble. They're giving up a lot of points on just about every board, but they held off Grischuk, Morosevich, and Yakovenko did Kenken, Gustafsson, and Friedman. So kudos to Germany for holding tough there, and the home team has still got its mojo working, and now we have no perfect teams. So we're going to have a bit of a train wreck here coming up. We did see some other interesting ones, just to go ahead and recap some of the results. We saw England hang tough here, although, again, they're one of the teams, you can see there that they're the 15th seed, that's that second number in the column there on the left, and they, you know, have overachieved, sort of, at least in the scoring, but actually they haven't faced anybody really that strong yet. I mean, they've done fine, but they've played against the 50th, the 32nd, and the 109th, and now the 44th seed. The one strong team they faced, Norway, which is, was itself a kind of a Cinderella team. And the fact that they're in tie for first here, despite Mickey Adams, their top board, losing 2 games, is pretty bizarre, I must say. That easy ride ends tomorrow, though, when they face mighty Russia. If you want to take a quick glance at the other standings, we can go ahead and scroll down. We can see some other teams there. Even bigger clump there with 8 match points, most with 4 wins and a draw, though Israel doing it with 3 wins and a couple drawn there. Sorry, I meant 4 wins and a loss. for the others. And then we go down to 7, where we'll find the United States and Spain, a couple of other heavy hitters. Netherlands have now fallen off the pace after a strong start. The United States taking out heroic Hong Kong 4-0, another symptom of these ridiculous pairings that they're using, was to go from playing Azerbaijan, the fourth seed, to playing Hong Kong, which I believe has several unrated players, or at least players who are untitled. They have, what's her name, Anya? This girl, Anya Korky, I think, is playing first board. She's a woman grandmaster for Hong Kong, but it's a pretty steep decline after that. Anyway, the United States won't wipe them out 4-0. As expected, so a little odd all the way around these pairings. So let's take a look at those pairings, at least the top ones coming up in round 6 before we get back and recap those round 5 results and games. And you can see here, I tried to cram in as many as I could. Over there on the left, we've got Russia-England coming up there, and then Ukraine-Germany, another big one. Azerbaijan-Armenia, a grudge match right there for sure. They've talked some smack in the past about each other. These are major, not to get into the geopolitics, but if you just Google Azerbaijan-Armenia conflict, you can spend days and days reading about all the recriminations about who took whose land and massacred whom and all those good things. And the players of the players and of course the official news agencies of the respective countries have gotten into the act a few times. So then France, Poland, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and India. And we look on down there, the U.S., Cuba, another little kind of grudge match we've got there. And even Spain, Philippines, if you really want to go back in the history books. I'm sure there are some people who are, you know, can be ticked off about Finland, Norway, some Scandinavian domination thing going on there. I don't know. And of course, Argentina, Uruguay, another battle of neighbors. So down, way down there, my Argentinos underperforming as usual. Really never seem to get it together in the Olympiad. Not sure why. They keep fielding stronger and stronger teams and doing worse and worse. All right, so let's talk a little bit. I can leave this up while you can peruse these round 6 pairings. It's certainly more interesting than looking at the logo, I imagine. Word of warning, I've done the best I can as far as the game scores, and it would be sad if I end up commentating on a game and it turns out not to be correct, but the PGN files and the games have been a bit of a mess on the official Dresden Olympiad site. The live broadcasts have worked well, they seem to be fine, but then something magic happens, or whatever the opposite of magic is, between the games on the live boards and putting them up on a PGN file. You think it would be very simple, it's a database process, but no. And they've been a mess, and usually it's only due to the indefatigable Mark Crowther at the Weekend Chess who've been able to put these things together, thanks to him. But yeah, the live broadcast on the official site seems to have gone well. I'm mostly watching on the ICC, so it's with everybody else, but it's overall the reports to the live stuff on the website have been good. Alright, so let's take a look a bit about some of these other top games. Ivanchuk, that was one of the other key pairings there, was Ivanchuk and Ukraine taking out Hungary, that's the word, ends with a Y, close enough. And beating Peter Leko, needing 127 moves to do it, but he did do it. So you got to give him some credit for that one. We'll take a look at that ending a bit later, and when we go through our game section, just it's going to be rough again, just dealing with these 30, the time control is fairly short, and no matter how good you are trying to play a long end game just with 30 second increments is just going to be brutal on the nerves for sure. That was the key game, of course, the last game to finish at 127 moves. That one settled the match because Almashi had beaten Elyanov and Karjakin had took out Polgar, and Judit Polgar really has not shown her level since I mentioned this in the Daily Dirt, that since she had her second kid, and it's just tough to come back full time. You have to work so hard, study so hard to compete at that 2700 level, and obviously her talent is still there, but she only played, I think, just one classical tournament earlier this year, and that was in January, a couple of rapid events since. And that's just not enough to stay on point, and she has not looked sharp in a couple of pretty bad losses so far in this Olympiad. That's unfortunate because when she's on, she's one of the most exciting players ever. But she's just not on so far. So Ukraine taking that one. Another underdog team that had some trouble was Norway. Azerbaijan finally ended their great run. Well, I guess they're still in it, of course, and with a player like Carlson, you're always in it. Strangely, Timur Radjabov kind of chickened out, and we were really hoping for a dragon on board one between Radjabov and Carlson, renewing that theoretical debate. But Radjabov took the day off, and it was left up to Mamedyarov. Not a bad substitute, mind you, also a top-10 player. But Shakhriyar Mamedyarov came in and did very well against Carlson, actually, with black, and was probably winning at several points. And maybe could have, you know, should have probably played on, but the match was already well in hand. His teammates Mamedov and Gashimov had already won their games, so they didn't really need to take any risks with that one and went ahead and took the draw. But, well, again, maybe take a look at that one here in just a moment. So the other one, the Netherlands, also had its pinata punctured. This was Armenia, the defending gold medal champs. Just needed one win to notch that one. Sargsyan beat Stellwagen. We'll look at that one in a minute as well. And England beat Italy, despite Adams losing again to Fabiano Caruana, my old Brooklyn homeboy who now plays for Italy, and I think that's his third straight win after two losses to begin, and here he beat Adams with black, and on the black side of a Tarasch French, no less, and Adams is just famously lethal with his knight d2 Tarasch French, but Caruana held on and then got the better of him in time trouble and crashed through on the queen side, just like the books say you're supposed to in the French. Very well done. But Nigel Short and young David Howell came to the rescue for England with wins, so they managed to take that match against Day in the leader group. So the other mismatches pretty much went as expected. India beat Austria. China beat Scotland, although by the minimum score. Scotland got a point and a half out of them, but again, only the match point matters. And still, it's tough also to measure motivation. I mean, not in this case. The Scots did play them very, very well. But I think in some of these matches, when these guys look over and see that, you know, a draw wins the match, why wear yourself out and risk losing or something? I think that's happening a lot in some of these matches. And let's see. So we've already talked a little bit about the pairings tomorrow. Let's go ahead and jump over, and then I'll come back and recap. But let's go ahead and take a look at a few of these games here. If we'll switch over to the diagram. And this was one of the ones I mentioned earlier, Sargsyan Stellwagen. And this is no, you know, great brilliancy to end all brilliances or anything, but it's a cute example after a long sequence of exchanges that it has this nice shot here, because otherwise he's could be actually in some trouble when that rook retreats. But instead, he's got the takes right there. And no matter what happens, that pawn gets loose, and really the rook is not good at all at dealing with it, even if he goes ahead and takes twice on c5. So he goes ahead and takes with the pawn, and now d6. And the computer says you can take on e5 here. It's pretty dicey, but you can get away with it. This would be the line here. Rook takes e5, and then d7, rook f8. It's giving the rook back this way, and still, okay, that may be to the computer better decision here to try to hang on and to get to a theoretical draw with that, and maybe so, but I think most humans would not want to sit there and go on to play this a piece down. So, and that was also Stellwagen's choice, so he played the rook over to f8, and white just takes his time here. f6, that didn't work out too well. And here's the real mistake. He could have just played, again, you're going to have to give the exchange back, and he could have done so with rook takes f6 here now, and takes, and then you're getting the pawns back, and you got better drawing chances than in the game. But back in the game, after playing that, he tried to get the king into the game here with king f7, but after this turns into a much, much worse rook endgame that really is resignable, which is pretty much what happened, because now the king is one step closer, but it doesn't really help you very much. In this case, it gets driven back too easily because the rook has to watch the b-pawn. So he resigned, I think, a few moves there. Back, check, and then, okay, here, really, black has absolutely nothing to do. Eventually, white's just going to walk the king up and push that e-pawn. So a nice win there for Sargsyan, and a key one there, a match between two of the top teams in the standings there, Armenia and in the Netherlands. So let's so we can move on to our next one. Again, the one we just mentioned, that in-game. And you're looking at this like, well, isn't this just a draw? Well, technically, yes, but Grandmasters always will play this out to the 50-move rule, and they win on a regular basis, even at the top level, especially with these increments. You've got 30 seconds. Usually, by this time, neither player had more than the 30 seconds. It just plays hell on your nerves to sit here and try to make these perfect moves. You have no time to calculate, and you just have just enough time to kind of look and then wait until you're down to 5 seconds, and then bang, and try to do that. And Leko knows his technical in-games as well as anybody in the world. I don't think there are any Grandmasters who would disagree with that. We've seen him play spectacular wins and defenses in technical in-games. But again, he got himself into a bit of a rough patch here. His rook is isolated. And now he's got the computer, of course, with the table bases, shows exactly every single move you have to make with no problem to defend this. And there's only one move, actually. And if you can find it, you're doing better than Leko. The computer points it out, which is Rook F8. But unfortunately for Peter Leko, he did not find it. And then Ivanchuk showed the winning method, which is actually pretty attractive here against that backed-up king. Once the enemy king gets in so close, it's very, very difficult to defend. So after Rook D8, the key here, Rook E3, preventing any checks. And then we see coming back here to pin the bishop, but now Rook E7, and really he's getting into trouble because now he's threatening to come around to the H-file with the rook and mate from there, so he's got to watch out. So comes over with the feint. That gets him to run, and then he comes back to D7, and now that's the key. The key there is that he doesn't have rook to e5 now. And because, again, if you'd played rook to d7 immediately, then white can defend with the king on f1 by playing rook to e5, and you can block the check with the rook coming back to e1 after rook d1 check. But that's the key to that little head fake there on the h-file. Get the king to come over and take away that e1 square. So now it's going to be mate. So nicely done by Ivanchuk, and of course a key game there, winning the match for Ukraine. So a big win for Chucky, and it drops Hungary down in the pack. Let's go on to a few down here. Talked about that Carlsen-Mamedyarov game, and we see Carlsen getting himself into some trouble here. And again, he bailed out very well, as the top guys do. The top guys are extremely good about saying, how do I cut my losses and just see if I can get to a draw, and he did so here after playing this rather frisky knight move, but getting himself into trouble here after the simple pin. Now he can defend this to the death, but it gets into more trouble. So after rook b8, he decided not to try to defend anymore, because the material is going to start dropping off very quickly if he does. So he went ahead and just gave up the knight. And okay, increasing that pin. So he gets a couple pawns for the pin piece here. There's actually a third pawn in the mix, although a couple of them are weak. So after this long sequence, we're just going to zip through here a little bit. Here, now, okay, we'll just keep going here. Takes, 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 takes. He's been doing a good job liquidating. Mamedyarov here just hoovers a bunch of pieces off the board. Now he's got himself to, just two pawns for the piece down, so that's looking pretty good. And here, actually, I talked about this position with Garry Kasparov, who's keeping an eye on some of the top games, as always interested in Carlsen's games, of course, as everyone is for that matter. And he really thought that Carlsen was just lost here, and okay, not that it's going to be simple, but he figured Mamedyarov could play for a win without any real risk with that extra knight, and he was expecting knight f5, but that does look very difficult to meet, getting that knight active and getting ready to home in on that pawn. But instead, he just played this rook move here, and after this just agreed to a draw, so was not interested in trying to grind out some endgame, especially now that that pawn's going to be protected and that bishop is of opposite color. So again, the match was already won for Azerbaijan, so it didn't really matter that much, but a little disappointing. It would have been nice to see him play for a win there a little harder, especially you got a couple top 10 guys slugging it out, which you don't get a whole lot of in the Olympiad. So but he did not. So discretion, better part of valor. And moving on, we had a couple interesting ones here for the India fans. This one I just caught my eye because it's kind of cute. It's one of those ones where if you start at the end, you're like, how did that get there? So you'll see how it got there. Okay, white's already struggling to here down a rook for bishop for two minors. He grabs a pawn, which, you know, looks wholesome enough. But after this cool move here, knight d8, okay, the rook has only one square, rook b8, and now here come the king. And suddenly Kinderman was probably realizing that he had some more serious troubles to worry about than the material balance, and he tries valiantly for a while, but the rook is trapped. And it just takes Hare Krishna a little while to maneuver around. And first push the rook into the corner. And just takes his time here. And we'll see what he does. Takes. Okay. Okay, he actually could have just played g3 immediately. Okay, so he goes and he plays bishop e4. Now, and there's really nothing white can do about this plan. He just doesn't have enough time. So bishop a4 is the key here. And bishop c6, trying to get away with some checks here. I ignore you. Rook to b8, and there he goes, completing the trap. And now he's just going to come in there and scoop him up. You can't play king c7 immediately because rook c8 check. So he has to play this cool thing first. So this is the final position. You look at this and you're like, how did that happen? But took quite a bit of work there for Hare Krishna to finally wrap up that rook. So nice one there. And last one here, let's take a quick look at here. This was another one that kind of caught my eye toward the finish. This pawn over on a5 does not really look poisoned, but watch what the white black queen does here after Rasmussen grabs it here, and then Posny is a strong Israeli grandmaster. Okay, I get the tempo here, but now, looks like white's going to save his bacon here for a minute, but it does not manage to do so. Queen e2, there's the big infiltration, got some threats. Now he's hitting that c2 bishop, and that's the curious thing. After that knight goes to b3, the bishop doesn't have any squares, that bishop on c2. So now we see a nice, cool desperation fling here. Knight d4, hoping that the pawn on e5 is overloaded because it's protecting the knight on f4. So if it takes, takes. But, and also there's the other take that you can also take on d4, and you have a check with forking the knight on c3, which is actually what does happen, but too late to save white. All right, so now we see, okay, that's a good one. Threatening mate in one, usually good. All right, so that forces him back. And now just takes, takes. King moves over, takes. Now, material is equal, but actually white's up a pawn, but it is black to move. So this hits the queen and the bishop, and, of course, you've got mate threats you've got to watch out for. So he pins, another nice little, again, this is just a whirlwind of tactics. Now we see the other point of knight e2, zing, oh, ouch, the queen is pinned, so now he's in trouble. What's he going to do? Now, of course, you can't just take the knight, because bishop takes queen on g3 is check, so yeah, that's doomed, and so he goes ahead and takes this. Now if knight takes queen, bishop takes queen, and white wins, except for checkmate. Small problem there. Alright, so nice. Just thought that was a fun sequence of tactics there. That you all enjoyed that. Alright, let's get back here to our friendly logo. And I hope you guys have been paying attention to all the stuff going on that Macaulay Peterson's putting up on the ICC blog. Definitely want to check that out as soon as you can. If you haven't, breaking news yesterday, well, actually today on the off day, was the match between Gatakomsky and Veselin Topalov, the candidates match to decide who will face world champion Vishy Anand in the world championship match that's scheduled for, tentatively, very tentatively, always with FIDE, tentatively scheduled for next fall. September was one of the dates they tossed out there, but anyway, you can never trust those dates. But they did make some progress. They've been negotiating and hassling and haggling about this for a long time. It was supposed to be in Bulgaria, and then Kamsky didn't want to play there, and then some goofball in Ukraine saying he was Kamsky's manager showed up and said, oh, I've got billions of dollars for this match, and then that never happened. And I mean, really, the whole thing was pretty much ridiculous. And FIDE finally put its foot down about 2 months too late, I would say, and said, "Oh, okay, we have a deadline." And they actually seemed to be holding to it, and they got a new bid from Bulgaria, so we're back to where we started, basically, except the players are at the table signing contracts this time, so it looks like they're aiming for a February date, but you can read about that in plenty of detail if you go to the ICC blog there at chessclub.com, and if you can read all about that, or heck, you can check out the summary. I stole most of the information from Macaulay, but if you want to read my write-up of it, you can do so at chessninja.com and the Daily Dirt, my blog, so keeping track of things there as well, or chat about it in the message boards even, or wherever else you want to go. So back in action on Wednesday, the FIDE is over, and they're back at the boards. So hope to see you as well watching there on the ICC. And until our next podcast, if you have any comments or questions or anything else, send them by email to mig@chessninja.com. I'll be happy to share your input on the air. Until tomorrow then, this has been Mig Gringard of ChessNinja.com for ICC Chess FM.